Hey, this is Ed. So this is a podcast, is that right?
This is.
Okay. We're officially podcasting right now. That's awesome.
This is Straight from the Cutter's Mouth.
Welcome to Straight from the Cutter's Mouth, a retina podcast. At least once a week, we aim to bring you insights and perspectives from the world of vitreoretinal surgery. I'm your host, Dr. Jay Schreather. Today, in episode 159, I'm joined by Dr. Lee Goldsmith, a double-trained physician, lawyer, and author who discusses medical malpractice with us, why it happens, and how you handle difficult cases as a physician. A list of financial disclosures are attached to this episode in the episode description. Straight from the Cutter's Mouth is now happy to be joined by Dr. Lee Goldsmith. Dr. Goldsmith is a MD, JD, who is now currently working in a law practice up in the New York area. His firm specializes in medical malpractice and in medical professional cases. And he has a unique background having been an MD, JD, and he's here today to talk a little bit about medical malpractice and his background. Dr. Goldsmith, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
We always ask our guests why they became a retina specialist, but you were a lawyer, but also a lawyer with a double degree. So let's talk a little bit about, first, why you became a lawyer and how you ended up with a double degree.
Well, what happened was I attended NYU School of Medicine, and my wife was doing her master's thesis on the psychiatric prison ward. So I decided to do elective time on the prison ward, got fascinated, and took law and psychiatry at the law school while I was in medical school. And the combination of the two and the varying changes that occur between law and medicine on a constant basis, at the end of medical school, I decided it'd be fun to go on to law school and try to combine the two in a practice.
And let's talk a little bit about your law practice and how you got interested in into medical malpractice.
Well, when I was in law school and having finished medical school, like anybody else at that point in time, I needed a job. And the best thing I could find at that time, though I looked with defense firms and plaintiff's firms, defense firms were not really interested in my credentials because they had more positions than anything that they could rely upon. So they basically, I ended up working for a plaintiff's firm that specialized in drug litigation. So I first became involved in representing and working with patients who had had adverse reactions to drugs. And then this firm also did defense malpractice. So I saw some of that at the time, and I saw plaintiff's medical malpractice. And I became involved and interested in it not only because of what it did to the individual, but what it did to the physician and how medical malpractice could be averted, prevented, and I got involved very deeply into risk management, not from the idea of controlling the risk after it occurred, but on how that risk could be prevented before it occurred. In other words, how do we stop malpractice suits, even though I was making my money from malpractice suits and representing patients?
You've written a couple of articles, which we're going to cite for a discussion. You wrote this article for Medscape, talked about why you get sued, directed towards physicians. And so my question is, let's talk a little about the article. You know, you referenced that you do see, you know, close to 40 referrals for malpractice in a month, and really only one of them may be a viable case. What is the most common reason patients will call with a possible malpractice case?
The patient calls probably because they want to find out why. There's been a breakdown in communication. Now, one of the things that we've seen over the years is that physicians who get involved in an adverse event try to hide from the patient. They don't want to discuss it. They're embarrassed. Somebody dies unexpectedly. You don't want to go see the patient. This is not what was supposed to happen. So the patient at that point in time, or the family of the patient at that point in time, has questions to be answered. And they look to get answers. They don't necessarily expect somebody to come in and say, I did something wrong. They look for somebody to come in and, in effect, hold their hands, explain to them, advise them. And people are not stupid. People are aware of what is going on. people today check the internet all the time. So if I were to say the patient, the family of the patient, is looking for answers, and if the physician doesn't give those answers to the patient, then the patient or their family looks elsewhere. And they'll look to other members of the family, they'll look to a family member who's a physician, or they will look to the lawyer. And I get emails, because all of us have websites, so I get emails from people who are looking for information, and it can be the craziest information that they're looking for. And we look at it, and I think one of the basic things that physicians don't understand is, what do we look at as an attorney for what is a viable malpractice suit? And I think to explain that is to say, we are, as you are basically, we're in business. We're in business to represent people. And if I represent somebody without a viable malpractice suit, then I'm probably going to lose. And if I represent somebody with a viable suit, then I can win, and then, as an attorney, as crassly as I can say it, make money. So what an attorney looks at is, says, what are the damages in the case? That's the first thing that they look at after this person calls. And if it's a child who's been born with brain damage, if it is somebody that's undergone surgery and lost the vision in their eye, these are major damages to that person. It can affect their livelihood. And therefore, we say, okay, this is a viable case because the damages are there. And then we look at the medical negligence. And that's the first steps that we're doing. The damages, what does the medical record say? We get the medical records, and we go from there to make a decision. But basically, number one, people want to find out why. If they come to me, I will give them the answers.
Yeah, the other thing you referenced in that article was billing, and how billing can become an issue, and sometimes that's what drives patients to an attorney's office. What is your perspective if you do have a complication? Let's say, what advice would you have for physicians about that part of it?
Well, sometimes we've seen a number of instances. One of the local hospitals here has a policy, and it's part of the, when you go into the emergency room, you're signing a whole batch of papers. Nobody ever reads those papers. And in the midst of those papers that this hospital uses, it states that you may be assigned a physician who does not accept your insurance. Nobody reads that beforehand. They then go in, they're seen by the physician, they're discharged from the hospital maybe a few days later after being admitted, and this physician, who is not part of their network, then sends them a bill for $7,000 or $10,000 or whatever it may be. And they say, but I went into the hospital, the hospital accepts my insurance, I didn't know that this physician would not accept my insurance, I'm now being blindsided with a bill I can't pay. I've got to get out of this bill. What am I going to do? Well, one of the things that they'll do is, did something go wrong? Should I sue this physician for medical malpractice? Can I sue this physician for medical malpractice? The other way is, and we've seen this very often, is physicians don't want to accept insurance, and there have been a number of companies that have been established just so physicians don't have to accept insurance. And we get to the point where we're saying, there's been an error, there's a problem, I have a bill. Now, let's say in the case that very often occurs is, that's an appropriate bill. There was no negligence. It was just a bad result. My feeling is a physician should be paid for his services. A physician who is billing appropriately should be paid for the services that are rendered. If there's a bad result, it can be worked out. It can be explained. But don't rush off to send that bill to somebody who collects claims. It is better to work it out with the patient and collect your fees. But let's say you work it out and say, look, we know it did not work out the way you'd like. My bill is appropriate. There was nothing that was done wrong here. We would like to get paid. You can't pay us immediately. Pay us out over time. don't rub salt into a wound, even though it's appropriate. You have a right to be paid. You have a right to collect for your services. But people who have been injured don't necessarily react that way and be sensitive to that fact.
What about and you referenced this a little bit too, you talked about avoiding patients being a common reason, patients not getting the answers that they want. What about lying? I mean, obviously lying is always a no-no, medicine or otherwise, but how commonly is that the issue where a patient feels like they were told something dishonest?
More than I would like to say, and there's always a tendency to attempt to change records. Today, you tell somebody about a medical condition, and just before we started this conversation, I got a call about somebody who was overweight, who went into an emergency room, was in the emergency room for 14 hours, and while an MRI, died. The probability is that the individual died of a pulmonary embolus. He had had pain in his leg, he was short of breath, so the probability is a pulmonary embolus. The family was told he died of cardiac arrest. Yes, he did die of cardiac arrest, but the cause of it was a pulmonary embolus. The family is sophisticated enough with their friends and medical colleagues in their family to know what is going on. So don't lie. That just gets people more angry. And never, never change your records. With all the electronic records that are going on now, we do electronic obtaining of the records. We go into the beta material within the records. We go into the databases. We can find out if you've changed records. The easiest way to get sued is to lie to a patient. That's not giving them proper information. The best way to lose even a lawsuit that you should win and is defensible is to change your records. Once I know that you as a physician has changed your records, I don't care how honest you are. I don't care how right you are. I don't care how defensible the case is. You've lost.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like a no-brainer, but unfortunately, a lot of people don't think clearly in these moments of stress.
Well, you don't think clearly in the moments of stress, but look, you're a surgeon. Every day you go into the OR, you know that there's a potential for a problem. You function very well under stress. And when there is a problem, you sit back and you look at it and say, how am I going to handle it? Do the same thing. What I tell physicians, and we represent a lot of physicians over the years, when somebody walks into your office and serves you with a summons, you've got an office full of patients out there. They deserve your attention. The lawsuit will be handled. It's going to take years. Take that summons, complaint, put it in a drawer, wait until after office hours, take care of your patients. You're a professional. And as a professional, you face stress. And we as attorneys add to that stress, perhaps. But by the same token, you've got to avoid us and handle it appropriately.
You know, the last thing I'll tell you, and you talked about avoiding, you know, you call it stupid or uncomfortable situations. You referenced a story, you know, a physician who had a complication during delivery and then came back to the same woman years later. You know, sort of similar kind of common sense rules. I mean, again, if you sense, especially many doctors in our field work in group practices, is there value to getting a second voice, second opinion, or even sometimes, you know, quietly transferring care, maybe not making the patient feel like they're being abandoned, but, you know, having a different voice in the room?
Well, one of the delightful things relates to, and I have no qualms about saying it, I was one of your patients. And I think the experience that I had at the Bascom Palmer Institute was absolutely fantastic. I was seen by multiple individuals. I was seen by individuals, all of whom explained what was going on. The staff explained what was going on. So that even though I saw different individuals and ended up with yourself as my surgeon, I never felt that I was being passed from one to another without getting the appropriate information from each person along the line. So that there was a tremendous comfort factor for an individual such as myself who just walked into an institution with whom I had had no relationship, knew no one, and was experiencing what could be very stressful to some individuals. I, having represented an eye and ear infirmary for many, many years and doing their work, is probably more comfortable than most patients. But transferring of care from one physician to another need not be stressful if information goes along with it. And there's one other thing that I'd like to add, if I may, after you, if you don't have any other questions.
Go ahead.
Okay. All of us who are professionals may at one time or another get sued. I've been sued for legal malpractice in a case that went up to the Supreme Court of the state of New Jersey, where ultimately I was found not to have liability. But the trial court rendered a verdict against me. The appellate division dismissed the case, and the Supreme Court confirmed. So we all have the potential for being sued. When that may occur, whether you're justified or not, put the lawsuit aside, take care of your patients, and then consult with the attorneys. But, and this is sort of the caveat, if your insurance covers the potential cost of the litigation, it is something that you can talk to the defense attorney about and discuss with him. If there is the potential for that lawsuit to be in excess of your policy, do not hesitate to get other legal counsel. And the other legal counsel should be any attorney with experience in handling medical negligence litigation, be they on the plaintiff's side or defense side, because those are the ones who will know what goes on, how it should be handled, and what you might expect in the litigation. Remember, we as patients expect information. We as lawyers should be giving information, as you should to your patients.
Well, Dr. Goldsmith, I really appreciate the kind words and you taking the time to give some advice and come on the podcast. It's a very interesting, unique perspective and very, very part of maybe the part that we don't see as much, because, again, I think most of us don't talk about our problems, and for the people who've had suits, we don't usually talk about it. But to hear the other perspective about why these happen and what sort of things you can extrapolate that maybe could help avoid lawsuits and handle them. I appreciate your time, and I think our listeners will appreciate it as well. Thanks again for doing this.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
As always, you can find this episode and all prior episodes on our website, retinapodcast.com. That's retinapodcast.com. We have 159 episodes, including this one, and they're sorted by category. Our blog is also there, and we have the weekly perspectives on the latest episodes that are posted. On the website, you can sign up for our mailing list to get updates on the most recent episodes, or alternatively, you can subscribe in the Apple Podcast Store or Android Store on your smartphone. You can like our Facebook page or find us on Twitter at Retina Podcast, and to contact us, click on the Contact Us link on our website or email us directly at retinapodcast@gmail.com. Feedback is the lifeblood of what we do, so please give feedback on things you want to hear or things we can do better. And we appreciate everyone who's subscribed in the Apple Store or Android Store who has left positive comments. Those are very, very helpful, so thank you. Many thanks to Dr. Goldsmith for joining me. Thanks to Dr. Louis Kai, Mike Benacasa, and Angela Chang for producing a great episode. Thank you, listeners, for what you do on a daily basis, the patient care you provide, the articles you read and publish, and the conversations you inspire. This is Jay Schreeder, signing off.
This is straight from the cutter's mouth.
Take care. Bye-bye.